Part 2, wherein it is considered whether there is or can be any such sort of freedom of will as that wherein Arminians place the essence of the liberty of all moral agents, and whether any such thing ever was or can be conceived of. Section 1, showing the manifest inconsistence of the Arminian notion of liberty of will consisting in the will's self-determining power. Excuse me. Having taken notice of those things which may be necessary to be observed concerning the meaning of the principal terms and phrases made use of in controversies concerning human liberty, and particularly observed what liberty is according to the common language and general apprehension of mankind, and what it is as understood and maintained by Arminians, I proceed to consider the Arminian notion of the freedom of the will, and the supposed necessity of it in order to moral agency, or in order to any one's being capable of virtue or vice, and properly the subject of command or counsel, praise or blame, promises or threatenings, rewards or punishments, or whether that which has been described as the thing meant by liberty in common speech be not sufficient, and the only liberty which makes or can make any one a moral agent, and so properly the subject of these things. In this part, I shall consider whether any such thing be possible or conceivable as that freedom of will which Arminians insist on, and shall inquire whether any such sort of liberty be necessary to moral agency, etc., in the next part. And first of all, I shall consider the notion of a self-determining power in the will, wherein, according to the Arminians, does most essentially consist the will's freedom, and shall particularly inquire whether it be not plainly absurd and a manifest inconsistence to suppose that the will itself determines all the free acts of the will. Here I shall not insist on the great impropriety of such ways of speaking as the will determining itself, because actions are to be to ascribe to agents, and not properly to the powers of agents, which improper way of speaking leads to many mistakes and much confusion, as Mr. Locke observes. But I shall suppose that the Arminians, when they speak of the will's determining itself, do by the will mean the soul willing. I shall take it for granted that when they speak of the will as the determiner, they mean the soul in the exercise of a power of willing, or acting voluntarily. I shall suppose this to be their meaning, because nothing else can be meant without the grossest and plainest absurdity. In all cases, when we speak of the powers or principles of acting, or doing such things, we mean that the agents which have these powers of acting do them in the exercise of those powers. So, where we say, valor fights courageously, we mean the man who is under the influence of valor fights courageously. When we say love seeks the object loved, we mean the person loving seeks that object. When we say the understanding discerns, we mean the soul in the exercise of that faculty. So when it is said, the will decides or determines, this meaning must be that the person in the exercise of power of willing and choosing, or the soul acting voluntarily, determines. Therefore, if the will determines all its own free acts, the soul determines them in the exercise of a power of willing and choosing, or, which is the same thing, it determines them of choice. It determines its own acts by choosing its own acts. If the will determines the will, then choice orders and determines the choice, and acts of choice are subject to the decision and follow the conduct of other acts of choice. And therefore, if the will determines all its own free acts, then every free act of choice is determined by a preceding act of choice, choosing that act. And if that preceding act of the will be also a free act, then by these principles, and this act too, the will is self-determined. That is, in like manner, is an act that the soul voluntarily chooses, or, which is the same thing, it is an act determined still by a preceding act of the will, choosing that. Which brings us directly to a contradiction, for it supposes an act of the will preceding the first act in the whole train, directing and determining the rest, or a free act of the will before the first free act of the will. Or else we must come at last to an act of the will determining the consequent acts, wherein the will is not self-determined, and so is not a free act, in this notion of freedom. But if the first act in the train, determining and fixing the rest, be not free, none of them all can be free, as is manifest at first view, but shall be demonstrated presently. If the will which we find governs the members of the body and determines their motions, does also govern itself and determines its own actions, it doubtless determines them the same way, even by antecedent volitions. The will determines which way the hands and feet shall move, by an act of choice, and there is no other way of the will's determining, directing, or commanding anything at all. Whatsoever the will commands, it commands by an act of the will. And if it has itself under its command and determines itself in its own actions, it doubtless does it the same way that it determines other things which are under its command. So that if the freedom of the will consists in this, that it has itself and its own actions under its command and direction, and its own volitions are determined by itself, it will follow that every free volition arises from another antecedent volition, directing and commanding that. And if that directing volition be also free, and that also the will is determined, that is to say, that directing volition is determined by another going before that, and so on, till we come to the first volition in the whole series. And if that first volition be free, and the will self-determined in it, then that is determined by another volition preceding that, which is a contradiction, because by the supposition it can have none before it, to direct or determine it, being the first in the train. But if that first volition is not determined by any preceding act of the will, then that act is not determined by the will, and so is not free in the Arminian notion of freedom, which consists in the will's self-determination. And if that first act of the will, which determines and fixes the subsequent acts, be not free, none of the following acts which are determined by it can be free. If we suppose there are five acts in the train, the fifth and last determined by the fourth, and the fourth by the third by the second, and the second by the first. If the first is not determined by the will, and so not free, then none of them are truly determined by the will. That is, that each of them are as they are, and not otherwise. It is not first owing to the will, but to the determination of the first in the series, which is not dependent on the will, and that which the will has no hand in determining. And this being that which decides what the rest shall be, and determines their existence, therefore the first determination of their existence is not from the will. The case is just the same. If instead of a chain of five acts of the will, we should suppose a succession of 10, or 100, or 10,000, if the first act be not free, being determined by something out of the will, and this determines the next to be agreeable to itself, and that the next, and so on, none of them are free, but all originally depend on and are determined by some cause out of the will. And so all freedom in the case is excluded, and no act of the will can be free, according to this notion of freedom. If we should suppose a long chain of 10,000 links so connected that if the first link moves, it will move the next, and that the next, and so the whole chain must be determined to motion, and in the direction of its motion by the motion of the first link, and that is moved by something else. In this case, though all the links but one are moved by other parts of the same chain, yet it appears that the motion of no one, nor the direction of its motion, is from any self-moving or self-determining power in the chain, any more than if every link were immediately moved by something that did not belong to the chain. If the will be not free in the first act, which causes the next, then neither is it free in the next, which is caused by that first act. For though indeed the will caused it, yet it did not cause it freely, because the preceding act by which it was caused was not free. And again, if the will be not free in the second act, so neither can it be in the third, which is caused by that, because in like manner, that third was determined by an act of the will that was not free. And so we may go on to the next act, and from that to the next, and how long soever the succession of acts is, it is all one. If the first on which the whole chain depends, and which determines all the rest, be not a free act, the will is not free in causing or determining any one of those acts, because the act by which it determines them all is not a free act, and therefore the will is no more free in determining them than if it did not cause them at all. Thus, this Arminian notion of liberty of the will, consisting in the will's self-determination, is repugnant to itself, and shuts itself wholly out of the world. Section 2. Several supposed ways of evading the foregoing reasoning considered. If to evade the force of what has been observed, it should be said that when the Arminians speak of the will determining its own acts, they do not mean that the will determines them by any preceding act, or that one act of the will determines another, but only that the faculty or power of will, or the soul in the use of that power, determines its own volitions, and that it does it without any act going before the act determined. Such an evasion would be full of the most gross absurdity. And I confess, it is an evasion of my own inventing, and I do not know but I should wrong the Arminians in supposing that any of them would make use of it. But, it being as good a one as I can invent, I would observe upon it a few things. First, if the power of the will determines an act of volition, or the soul, in the use or exercise of that power determines it, that is the same thing as for the soul to determine volition by an act of will, for an exercise of the power of will and an act of that power are the same thing. Therefore, to say that the power of will or the soul in the use or exercise of that power determines volition, without an act of will preceding the volition determined, is indeed a contradiction. Secondly, if a power of will determines the act of the will, then a power of choosing determines it. For, as was before observed, in every act of will there is choice, and a power of willing is a power of choosing. But if a power of choosing determines the act of volition, it determines it by choosing it. For it is most absurd to say that a power of choosing determines one thing rather than another, without choosing anything. But if a power of choosing determines volition by choosing it, then here is the act of volition determined by an antecedent choice, choosing that volition. Thirdly, to say that the faculty or the soul determines its own volition, but not by any act, is a contradiction. Because for the soul to direct, decide, or determine anything is to act, and this is supposed, for the soul is here spoken of as being a cause in this affair, doing something, or, which is the same thing, exerting itself in order to an effect, which effect is the determination of volition, or the particular kind and manner of an act of will. But certainly this action is not the same with the effect in order to the production of which it is exerted, but must be something prior to it. The advocates for this notion of the freedom of the will speak of a certain sovereignty in the will, whereby it has power to determine its own volitions. and therefore the determination of volition must itself be an act of the will, for otherwise it can be no exercise of that supposed power and sovereignty. Again, if the will determines itself, then either the will is active in determining its volitions, or it is not. If active, then the determination is an act of the will, and so there is one act of the will determining another. But if the will is not active in the determination, then how does it exercise any liberty in it? These gentlemen suppose that the thing wherein the will exercises liberty is in its determining its own acts. But how can this be, if it be not active in determining? Certainly the will, or the soul, cannot exercise any liberty in that wherein it doth not act, or wherein it doth not exercise itself. So that if either part of this dilemma be taken, this scheme of liberty, consisting in self-determining power, is overthrown. If there be an act of the will in determining all its own free acts, then one free act of the will is determined by another. And so we have the absurdity of every free act, even the very first, determined by a foregoing free act. But if there be no act or exercise of the will in determining its own acts, then no liberty is exercised in determining them. From whence it follows that no liberty consists in the will's power to determine its own acts, or, which is the same thing, that there is no such thing as liberty consisting in a self-determining power of the will. If it should be said that, although it be true, if the soul determines its own volitions, it must be active in so doing, and the determination itself must be an act, yet there is no need of supposing this act to be prior to the volition determined, but the will, or soul, determines the act of the will in willing. It determines its own volition, in the very act of volition. It directs and limits the act of the will, causing it to be so, and not otherwise, in exerting the act, without any preceding act to exert that. If any should say after this manner, they must mean one of these three things. Either, number one, that the determining act, though it be before the act determined in the order of nature, yet is not before it in order of time. Or, number two, that the determining act is not before the act determined, either in the order of time or nature, nor is truly distinct from it, but that the soul's determining the act of volition is the same thing with its exerting the act of volition. The mind's exerting such a particular act as its causing and determining the act. Or, number three, that volition has no cause and is no effect, but comes into existence with such a particular determination, without any ground or reason of its existence and determination. I shall consider these distinctly. Number one, if all that is meant be that the determining act is not before the act determined in order of time, it will not help the case at all, though it should be allowed. If it be before the determined act in the order of nature, being the cause or ground of its existence, this much proves it to be distinct from and independent on it, as if it were before in the order of time. As the cause of the particular motion of a natural body in a certain direction may have no distance as to time, yet it cannot be the same with the motion affected by it, but must be as distinct from it as any other cause, that is, before its effect in the order of time, as the architect is distinct from the house which he builds, or the father distinct from the son which he begets. And if the act of the will determining be distinct from the act determined, and before it in the order of nature, then we can go back from one to another till we come to the first in the series, which has no act of the will before it in the order of nature determining it, and consequently is an act not determined by the will, and so not a free act in this notion of freedom. And this being the act which determines all the rest, none of them are free acts. As when there is a chain of many links, the first of which only is taken hold of and drawn by hand, All the rest may follow and be moved at the same instant without any distance of time, but yet the motion of one link is before that of another in the order of nature. The last is moved by the next, and that by the next, and so till we come to the first, which is not being moved by any other, but by something distinct from the whole chain. This as much proves that no part is moved by any self-moving power in the chain, as if the motion of one link followed that of another in the order of time. Number two, if any should say that the determining act is not before the determined act, either in the order of time or of nature, nor is distinct from it, but that the exertion of the act is the determination of the act, that for the soul to exert a particular volition is for it to cause and determine that act of volition, I would on this observe that the thing in question seems to be forgotten or kept out of sight in a darkness and unintelligibleness of speech, unless such an objector would mean to contradict himself. The very act of volition itself is doubtless a determination of mind, i.e., it is the mind's drawing up a conclusion, or coming to a choice between two or more things proposed to it. But determining among external objects of choice is not the same with determining the act of choice itself among various possible acts of choice. The question is, what influences, directs, or determines the mind or will to come to such a conclusion or choice as it does? Or what is the cause, ground, or reason why it concludes thus and not otherwise? Now it must be answered, according to the Arminian notion of freedom, that the will influences, orders, and determines itself thus to act. And if it does, I say, it must be by some antecedent act. To say it is caused, influenced, and determined by something, and yet not determined by anything antecedent, either in order of time or nature, is a contradiction. For that is what is meant by a thing's being prior in the order of nature, that it is some way the cause or reason of the thing with respect to which it is said to be prior. If the particular act or exertion of will which comes into existence be anything properly determined at all, then it has some cause of existing, and of existing in such a particular determinate manner, and not another, some cause whose influence decides the matter, which cause is distinct from the effect and prior to it. But to say that the will or mind orders, influences, and determines itself to exert an act by the very exertion itself is to make the exertion both cause and effect, or the exerting such an act to be a cause of the exertion of such an act. But the question is, what is the cause and reason of the soul's exerting such an act? To which the answer is, the soul exerts such an act, and that is the cause of it. And so, by this, the exertion must be distinct from, and in the order of nature prior to, itself. Number three, if the meaning be that the soul's exertion of such a particular act of will is a thing that comes to pass of itself, without any cause, and that there is absolutely no reason of the soul being determined to exert such a volition and make such a choice, rather than another, I say, if this be the meaning of Arminians when they contend so earnestly for the will determining its own acts, and for liberty of will consisting in self-determining power, they do nothing but confound themselves and others with words without a meaning. In the question, what determines the will? And in their answer, that the will determines itself, and in all the dispute, it seems to be taken for granted that something determines the will, and the controversy on this head is not whether its determination has any cause or foundation at all, but where the foundation of it is, whether in the will itself or somewhere else. But if the thing intended be what is above mentioned, then nothing at all determines the will. volition having absolutely no cause or foundation of its existence, either within or without. There is a great noise made about self-determining power as the source of all free acts of the will. But when the matter comes to be explained, the meaning is that no power at all is the source of these acts, neither self-determining power nor any other, but they arise from nothing. No cause, no power, no influence being at all concerned in the matter. However, this very thing, even that the free acts of the will are events which come to pass without a cause, is certainly implied in the Arminian notion of liberty of will, though it be very inconsistent with many other things in their scheme, and repugnant to some things implied in their notion of liberty. Their opinion implies that the particular determination of volition is without any cause, because they hold the free acts of the will to be contingent events, and contingence is essential to freedom in their notion of it. But certainly, those things which have a prior ground and reason of their particular existence, a cause which antecedently determines them to be, and determines them to be just as they are, do not happen contingently. If something foregoing, by a casual influence and connection, determines and fixes precisely their coming to pass, and the manner of it, then it does not remain a contingent thing whether they shall come to pass or no. And because it is a question in many respects very important in this controversy, whether the free acts of the will are events which come to pass without a cause, I shall be particular in examining this point in the two following sections. Section 3. Whether any event whatsoever, and volition in particular, can come to pass without a cause of its existence. Before I enter on any argument on this subject, I would explain how I would be understood when I use the word cause in this discourse, since, for want of a better word, I shall have occasion to use it in a sense which is more extensive than that in which it is sometimes used. The word is often used in so restrained a sense as to signify only that which has a positive efficiency or influence to produce a thing or bring it to pass. But there are many things which have no positive productive influence, which yet are causes in this respect, that they have truly the nature of a reason why some things are rather than others, or why they are thus rather than otherwise. Thus, the absence of the sun in the night is not the cause of the fall of dew at that time, in the same manner as its beams are the cause of the ascent of vapors in the daytime, and its withdrawal in the winter is not in the same manner the cause of the freezing of the waters, as its approach in the spring is the cause of their thawing. But yet, the withdrawal or absence of the sun is an antecedent with which these effects in the night and winter are connected and on which they depend, and is one thing that belongs to the ground and reason why they come to pass at that time rather than at other times, though the absence of the sun is nothing positive nor has any positive influence. It may further be observed that when I speak of connection of causes and effects, I have respect to moral causes as well as those that are called natural in distinction from them. Moral causes may be causes in as proper a sense as any causes whatsoever may have as real an influence and may as truly be the ground and reason of an event coming to pass. Therefore, I sometimes use the word cause in this inquiry to signify any antecedent, either natural or moral, positive or negative, on which an event, either a thing or the manner and circumstance of a thing so depends, that it is the ground and reason, either in whole or in part, why it is rather than not, or why it is as it is rather than otherwise, or, in other words, any antecedent with which a consequent event is so connected that it truly belongs to the reason when the proposition which affirms that event is true, whether it has any positive influence or not, And agreeably to this, I sometimes use the word effect for the consequence of another thing, which is perhaps rather an occasion than a cause, most properly speaking. I am the more careful thus to explain my meaning that I may cut off occasion from any that might seek occasion to cavil and object against some things which I may say concerning the dependence of all things which come to pass on some cause and their connection with the cause. Having thus explained what I mean by cause, I assert that nothing ever comes to pass without a cause. What is self-existent must be from eternity and must be unchangeable, but as to all things that begin to be, they are not self-existent, and therefore must have some foundation of their existence without themselves. That whatsoever begins to be, which before was not, must have a cause why it then begins to exist, seems to be the first dictate of the common and natural sense which God hath implanted in the minds of all mankind, and the main foundation of all our reasonings about the existence of things past, present, or to come. And this dictate of common sense equally respects substances and modes, or things and the manner and circumstances of things. Thus, if we see a body which has hitherto been at rest, start out of a state of rest and begin to move, we do as naturally and necessarily suppose that there is some cause or reason of this new mode of existence, as of the existence of a body itself which had hitherto not existed. And so, if a body which had hitherto moved in a certain direction should suddenly change the direction of its motion, or if it should put off its old figure and take a new one, or change its color, the beginning of these new modes is a new event, and the human mind necessarily supposes that there is some cause or reason of them. If this grand principle of common sense be taken away, all arguing from effects to causes ceaseth, and so all knowledge of any existence, besides what we have by the most direct and immediate intuition, particularly all our proof of the being of God, ceases. We argue as being from our own being, and the being of other beings, of other things, which we are sensible once were not, but have begun to be, and from the being of the world, with all its constituent parts, and the matter of their existence, all which we see plainly are not necessary in their own nature, and so not self-existent, and therefore must have a cause. But if things not in themselves necessary may begin to be without a cause, all this arguing is vain. Indeed, I will not affirm that there is in the nature of things no foundation for the knowledge of the being of God without evidence of it from his works. I do suppose that there is a great absurdity in denying being in general and imagining an eternal, absolute, universal nothing, and therefore that there would be in the nature of things a foundation of intuitive evidence that there must be an eternal, infinite, most perfect being, if we had strength and comprehension of mind sufficient to have a clear idea of general and universal being. But then we should not properly come to the knowledge of the being of God by arguing. Our evidence would be intuitive. We should see it, as we see other things that are necessary in themselves, the contraries of which are in their own nature absurd and contradictory, as we see that 2 + 2 = 4, and as we see that a circle has no angles. If we had as clear an idea of universal infinite entity as we have of these other things, I suppose we should most intuitively see the absurdity of supporting such being not to be, should immediately see there is no room for the question whether it is possible that being, in the most general, abstracted notion of it, should not be. But we have not that strength and extent of mind to know this certainty in this intuitive, independent manner. But the way that mankind come to the knowledge of the being of God is that which the Apostle speaks of, Romans 1:20. The invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even as eternal power and Godhead. We first ascend and prove a posteriori, or from effects, that there must be an eternal cause, with a capital C. And then secondly, prove by argumentation, not intuition, that this being must be necessarily existent. And then thirdly, from the proved necessity of his existence, we may descend and prove many of his perfections a priori. But if once this grand principle of common sense be given up, and that what is not necessary in itself must have a cause, and we begin to maintain that things which heretofore have not been may come into existence and begin to be of themselves without any cause, all our means of ascending and our arguing from the creature to the creator and all our evidence of the being of God is cut off at one blow. In this case, we cannot prove there is a God, either from the being of the world and the creatures in it, or from the matter of their being, their order, beauty, and use. For if things may come into existence without any cause at all, then they doubtless may, without any cause, answerable to the effect. Our minds do alike naturally suppose and determine both these things, namely, that what begins has what begins to be has a cause, and also that it has a cause proportionable to the effect. The same principle which leads us to determine that there cannot be anything coming to pass without a cause leads us to determine that there cannot be more in the effect than in the cause. Yea, if once it should be allowed that things may come to pass without a cause, we should not only have no proof of the being of God, but we should be without evidence of the existence of anything whatsoever, but our own immediately present ideas and consciousness. For we have no way to prove anything else, but by arguing from effects to causes, that's a capital C, from the ideas now immediately in view. We argue other things not immediately in view, from sensations now excited in us. We infer the existence of things without us as the causes of these sensations. And from the existence of these things, we argue other things, on which they depend as effects on causes. We infer the past existence of ourselves, or anything else, by memory, only as we argue that the ideas which are now in our minds are the consequences of past ideas and sensations. We immediately perceive nothing else but the ideas which are at this moment extant in our minds. We perceive or know other things only by means of these, as necessarily connected with others, and dependent on them. But if things may be without causes, all this necessary connection and dependence is dissolved, and so all means of our knowledge is gone. If there be no absurdity or difficulty in supposing one thing to start out of non-existence into being of itself without a cause, then there is no absurdity or difficulty in supposing the same of millions. For nothing, or no difficulty multiplied, is still nothing, or no difficulty, nothing multiplied by nothing, does not increase the sum. And indeed, according to the hypothesis I am opposing of the acts of the will coming to pass without a cause, it is the cause in fact that millions of events, with capital E, are continually coming into existence contingently without any cause or reason why they do so all over the world, every day and hour, through all ages. So it is in a constant succession in every moral agent. This contingency, this efficient nothing, this effectual no cause is always ready at hand to produce this sort of effects as long as the agent exists and as often as he has occasion. If it were so, that things only of one kind, in other words, acts of the will, seem to come to pass of themselves, and it were an event, capital E, that was continual, and that that happened in a course wherever were found subjects capable of such events. This very thing would demonstrate that there was some cause of them which made such a difference between this event and others, and that they did not really happen contingently. For contingence is blind and does not pick and choose a particular sort of event. Nothing has no choice. This no cause, which causes no existence, cannot cause the existence which comes to pass to be of one particular sort only, distinguished from all others. Thus, that only one sort of matter drops out of the heavens, even water, and that this comes so often, so constantly, and plentifully, all over the world, in all ages, shows that there is some cause or reason of the falling of water out of the heavens, and that something besides mere contingence has a hand in the matter. If we should suppose non-entity to be about bring forth, if we should suppose non-entity to be about to bring forth, and things were coming into existence without any cause or antecedent upon which the existence or kind or manner of existence depends, or which could at all determine whether the things should be stones or stars or beasts or angels or human bodies or souls or some new motion or figure in natural bodies, or some new sensations in animals, or new ideas in the human understanding, or new volitions in the will, or anything else of all the infinite number of possibilities, then certainly it would not be expected, although many millions of things were coming into existence in this manner, all over the face of the earth, that they should all be only of one particular kind, and that it should be thus in all ages, and that this sort of existences should never fail to come to pass where there is room for them, or a subject capable of them, and that constantly whenever there is occasion. If any should imagine that there is something in the sort of event that renders it possible for it to come into existence without a cause, and should say that the free acts of the will are existences of an exceeding different nature from other things, by reason of which they may come into existence without any previous ground or reason of it, though other things cannot, if they make this objection in good earnest, it would be an evidence, of their strangely forgetting themselves. For they would be giving an account of some ground of the existence of a thing, when at the same time they would maintain there is no ground of its existence. Therefore, I would observe that the particular nature of existence, be it never so diverse from others, can lay no foundation for that thing coming into existence without a cause, because to suppose this would be to suppose the particular nature of existence to be a thing prior to existence, and so a thing which makes way for existence without a cause or reason of existence. But that which in any respect makes way for a thing coming into being, or for any manner or circumstance of its first existence, must be prior to the existence. The distinguished nature of the effect, which is something belonging to the effect, cannot have influence backward to act before it is. The peculiar nature of that thing called volition can do nothing, can have no influence while it is not, and afterwards it is too late for its influence, for then the thing has made sure of existence already without its help. So that it is indeed as repugnant to reason to suppose that an act of the will should come into existence without a cause, as to suppose the human soul, or an angel, or the globe of the earth, or the whole universe should come into existence without a cause. And if we allow, that such a sort of effect as a volition may come to pass without a cause, how do we know but that many other sorts of effects may do so too? It is not the particular kind of effect that makes the absurdity of supposing it as being without a cause, but something which is common to all things that ever began to be. In other words, that they are not self-existent or necessary in the nature of things. Section 4. whether volition can arise without a cause through the activity of the nature of the soul. The author of the essay on the freedom of the will in God and the creatures, in answer to that objection against his doctrine of a self-determining power in the will, pages 68 through 69, that nothing is or comes to pass without a sufficient reason why it is, and why it is in this manner rather than another, allows that it is thus in corporeal things, which are, properly and philosophically speaking, passive being. But it denies it is thus in spirits, which are beings of an active nature, who have the spring of action within themselves and can determine themselves, by which it is plainly supposed that such an event as an act of the will may come to pass in a spirit without a sufficient reason why it comes to pass, or why it is after this manner rather than another. But certainly this author in this matter must be very unwary and inadvertent. For, number one, the objection or difficulty proposed by him seems to be forgotten in his answer or solution. The very difficulty, as he himself proposes it, is this. How can an event come to pass without a sufficient reason why it is, or why it is in this manner rather than another? Instead of solving this difficulty with regard to volition, as he proposes, he forgets himself and answers another question quite diverse. In other words, what is the sufficient reason why it is, and why it is in this manner rather than another? And he assigns the active being's own determination as the cause, and a cause sufficient for the effect, and leaves all the difficulty unresolved, even how the soul's own determination, which he speaks of, came to exist, and to be what it is without a cause. The activity of the soul may enable it to be the cause of effects, but it does not at all enable it to be the subject of effects which have no cause, which is the thing this author supposes concerning acts of the will. Activity of nature will no more enable a being to produce effects and determine the manner of their existence within itself without a cause than out of itself in some other being. But if an active being should, through its activity, produce and determine an effect in some external object, how absurd would it be to say that the effect was produced without a cause? Number two. The question is not so much how a spirit endowed with activity comes to act, as why it exerts such an act and not another, or why it acts with such a particular determination. If activity of nature be the cause why a spirit, the soul of man for instance, acts and does not lie still, yet that alone is not the cause why its action is thus and thus limited, directed, and determined. Active nature is a general thing. It is an ability or tendency of nature to action, generally taken, which may be a cause why the soul acts, as occasion or reason is given. But this alone cannot be a sufficient cause why the soul exerts such a particular act at such a time rather than others. In order to this, there must be something besides a general tendency to action. There must also be a particular tendency to that individual action. If it should be asked why the soul of man uses its activity in such a manner as it does, and it should be answered that the soul uses its activity thus, rather than otherwise, because it has activity, would such an answer satisfy a rational man? Would it not rather be looked upon as a very impertinent one? Number three. An active being can bring no effects to pass by his activity, but what are consequent upon his acting. He produces nothing by his activity any other way than by the exercise of his activity, and so nothing but the fruits of its exercise. He brings nothing to pass by a dormant activity, but the exercise of his activity is action. And so his action or exercise of his activity must be prior to the effects of his activity. If an active being produces an effect in another being about which his activity is conversant, the effect being the fruit of his activity must be first exercised or exerted, and the effect of it must follow. So it must be, with equal reason, if the active being is his own subject, and his activity is conversant about himself, to produce and determine some effect in himself, still the exercise of his activity must go before the effect, which he brings to pass and determines by it. And therefore, his activity cannot be the cause of the determination of the first action, or exercise of activity itself, whence the effects of activity arise. For that would imply a contradiction. It would be to say, the first exercise of activity is before the first exercise of activity and is the cause of it. Number four, that the soul, though an active substance, cannot diversify its own acts, but by first acting, or be a determining cause of different acts, or any different effects, sometimes of one kind and sometimes of another, any other way than in consequence of its own diverse acts is manifest by this. That if so, then the same cause, the same causal influence without variation in any respect, would produce different effects at different times. For the same substance of the soul before it acts, and the same active nature of the soul before it is exerted, i.e., before in the order of nature, would be the cause of different effects. In other words, different volitions at different times. But the substance of the soul before it acts, and its active nature before it is exerted, are the same without variation. For it is some act that makes the first variation in the cause as to any causal exertion, force, or influence. But if it be so that the soul has no different causality or diverse causal influence in producing these diverse effects, then it is evident that the soul has no influence in the diversity of the effect, and that the difference of the effect cannot be owing to anything in the soul, or which is the same thing. The soul does not determine the diversity of the effect, which is contrary to the supposition. It is true, the substance of the soul before it acts, and before there is any difference in that respect, may be in a different state and circumstances. But those whom I oppose will not allow the different circumstances of the soul to be the determining causes of the acts of the will, as being contrary to their notion of self-determination. Number five, let us suppose, as these divines do, that there are no acts of the soul, strictly speaking, but free volitions. Then it will follow that the soul is an active being and nothing further than it is a voluntary or elective being. And whenever it produces effects actively, it produces effects voluntarily and electively. But to produce effects thus is the same thing as to produce effects in consequence of and according to its own choice. And if so, then surely the soul does not by its activity produce all its own acts of will or choice themselves. For this, by the supposition, is to produce all its free acts of choice voluntarily and electively or in consequence of its own free acts of choice, which brings the matter directly to the aforementioned contradiction of a free act of choice before the first free act of choice. According to these gentlemen's own notion of action, if there arises in the mind a volition without a free act of the will to produce it, the mind is not the voluntary cause of that volition, because it does not arise from, nor is regulated by, choice or design. And therefore, it cannot be that the mind should be the active, voluntary, determining cause of the first and leading volition that relates to the affair. The mind, being a designing cause, only enables it to produce effects in consequence of its design. It will not enable it to be the designing cause of all its own designs. The mind, being an elective cause, will enable it to produce effects only in consequence of its elections and according to them, but cannot enable it to be the elective cause of all its own elections, because that supposes an election before the first election. So, the mind being an active cause enables it to produce effects in consequence of its own acts, but cannot enable it to be the determining cause of all its own acts, for that is in the same manner a contradiction, as it supposes a determining act conversant about the first act and prior to it, having a causal influence on its existence and manner of existence. I can conceive of nothing else that can be meant by the soul having power to cause and determine its own volitions as a being to whom God has given a power of action. But this, that God has given power to the soul, sometimes at least, to excite volitions at its pleasure or according as it chooses. And this certainly supposes, in all such cases, a choice preceding all volitions which are thus caused, even the first of them, which runs into the aforementioned great absurdity. Therefore, the activity of the nature of the soul affords no relief from the difficulties with which the notion of a self-determining power in the will is attended, nor will it help in the least its absurdities and inconsistencies.